This is Teachers Talk Radio, and you are listening live.
Good evening, and welcome to the Late Late Show with Sean Mackay. Tonight I'll be talking to Sally Doherty about Toby and the Slugfishes, and about creative writing, and about everything about creating a perfect piece of writing, especially here on Late Late Show tonight.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and you are listening live. Tune in live at ttradio.org, or to join in the conversation, download the Podbean app and search Teachers Talk Radio. Follow the hashtag TTRadio. Tune in, talk it out with Teachers Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the show, another Friday Late Late Show with me, Sean Mackay. So tonight, as I said, I'm going to be talking to Sally Doherty, author of Toby and the Silver Blood Witches, who won the Book Bloggers Novel of the Year, and also shortlisted for a number of other prizes as well. A great author, a really fabulous book, and certainly one I'd recommend to go into most of your libraries. Now, obviously, with Sally tonight, Sally has ME, so it's a recorded interview, so you can't really ring in or text her and ask her any questions tonight because it's a recorded interview, but I guarantee that you will get some absolutely cracking advice from Sally. She talks about how she is able to kind of create the pieces of writing that she did. It was really wonderful talking to her, and I'm hoping that you will gain as much of it as you can do. Now, as I don't know about you, but I'm getting slightly nervous now. The year 11s are about, what, seven teaching weeks away from their exams. They're beginning to, I don't know whether they're more scared, them or me. But it's certainly one of those run-ups to the exams where you kind of start to really push those year 11s. And hopefully tonight's episode with Sally will give some of you teachers a little bit of inspiration to kind of go out there and push some of the things that Sally talks about in terms of her writing. Now, obviously, when I did talk to her earlier, it was great the amount of knowledge that she has. And also in a couple of weeks' time, I've also got another writing show about all things writing, followed in another 2 weeks after that with another author coming on and talking about neurodiversity in writing. So lots of stuff on writing over the next 6 weeks, and hopefully that will kind of tie into helping your year 11s get the best out of that writing process, especially in their language papers. But enough from me. We've got here in Leicestershire, we've got about the shortest half term of this year. I think we've got about three weeks left. It's a 4 week term, 3 weeks left, and hopefully we've got to cram in so much into those kind of 4 weeks. So as I said, I hope that you will be able to get an awful lot out of the stuff that we've done tonight. And what we'll do is, after each part that I play with the interview, I'll come back and we'll look at some of the things that Sally talked about, and then we'll go into a little bit more depth. So without further ado, let's get away from me and let's talk to Sally. Good evening, Sally. How are you?
Hi, Sean. Thanks for having me on the show. I'm good, thank you.
Fantastic. How's your day been?
Yeah, it's been fine. I live with Emmy, so I have to spend a lot of time resting, and it's been very wet today, as has the whole of February.
But, yes. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I came out without my coat because it was absolutely sunny this morning, and by the time I got to work, it was throwing it down. So I was quite lucky that a friend of mine had an umbrella to help me out. So brilliant. So let's get on with the show. So the first question, it's the question I ask everyone that comes on my show, is what is your favourite book and why?
So I decided I wanted to talk about my favourite children's book. Okay. because it was just one that I absolutely adored. And it was Goodnight, Mr. Tom by Michelle Magorian.
What an amazing book.
Yeah. So I think that quite a lot of teachers still use it in primary school. Mm-hmm. It wasn't actually one that we used in school at that time. It was one I read myself. Yeah. And for anyone that doesn't know it, it's about an evacuee called Will, who is in World War II, moved to a countryside village and moves in with Mr. Tom. And the reason why I absolutely loved this book, I think, was the strength of the characters,
yeah,
and particularly the way they develop, mm-hmm, and the way their relationship develops. They have such strong character arcs, and I think that's really the heart of the book and why I related to it so much.
Absolutely. The two main characters are brilliant, especially at the beginning where they both mistrust each other. And I think it's that journey towards trust that I think is a great thing for me. It's quite a harrowing story in a way, and I absolutely love it myself.
It is interesting, isn't it? Because it is harrowing. And nowadays, I actually prefer books that are more escapist.
Yes.
So it's interesting, and I haven't read it since childhood, and I still got my copy, and I picked it up this morning and read the first chapter to see if I would still like it. Yeah. And it still gave me all the feels with their character and the description.
Yeah.
So it's a timeless classic.
It absolutely is. I can remember the first time I read it was to actually teach it. And I can remember that it made such a profound impact on me. So I absolutely agree. It is also one of my favourite books too. So let's start with the writing process then. Can you let us know, what is it that made you want to start writing in general?
Well, when I was a kid, I loved reading writing stories. But then as life got busy, went to secondary school, exams, university, started a job, I found that I just didn't have any time for creativity. Life was really busy. Mm-hmm. But then in my early 20s, I unexpectedly fell ill with ME, as I've said. And many, many years later, I still have to spend a lot of time resting. I'm always at home. And one of the positives of this situation is I suddenly have time, and this space of creativity opened up in my brain again. And the stories just kind of refound me. It's definitely a silver lining of my situation.
Okay. So with ME, I mean, obviously you're there with the writing process. You've got lots of time on your hands. But is it tiring? Does it take you a long time to start to write? Do you have to take regular breaks?
Yes. So most of my day is taken up with, I mean, it depends what level of ME you have, but I have a severe level. So most of my day is taken up with resting so I can do fundamental tasks such as eating and washing. And I have one writing task a day, which is about 40 minutes. So I can write for 40 minutes a day. But what this means is that I have a lot of time in between each day to work on the plot and let the ideas percolate. So by the time I get to my next writing session, I know exactly what I'm going to write. So it can be frustrating that I can't write faster because I have so many stories in me wanting to get out. But, you know, it gives me a lot of time to fully form my worlds and the plots.
Yes, I mean, it must be interesting. I mean, obviously we try to get students to think about their stories and to think about things, but playing those plots as you're kind of sitting there resting throughout the day and kind of knowing that they're brewing and you can't wait to get them out, it's got to be kind of really exciting when you do get to that kind of 40-minute slot where you just think, I can get these out now, I can get these down.
And it gives me the motivation because not be able to write down stories really gives me motivation when I've got that time to use it wisely.
Okay, well, that actually leads us really quite nicely into the next question, which is, kind of how do you come up with these plots? I mean, you said you've got like a lot of time during the day, but where do they come from? Do they do you see things outside and you think, oh, what if this character did this, or what if this setting was here? How do you come up with all those plots for the stories?
Yes, so I think plots really come from everything around us. So, for example, in my first book, I have a mysterious, sinister organisation on the edge of the town. And in the town I grew up in, there was an army barracks on the edge of the town. And it was surrounded by high barbed wire fence in just one entrance with a security guard. And it was really, really mysterious. Like, no one was allowed to. Obviously, the families. But for the families that lived there, it was perfectly normal. But for the rest of us, you know, there was this air of mystery because no one was allowed there. So that just kind of inspired that story, not purposely. It just suddenly the plot grew from there. So I definitely think that, you know, plots are all around us. But also it can be great to put a kind of a spin on things. So if you see a normal object in your everyday life, put a kind of unusual spin on it. So for example, in my mysterious building, I thought there's someone at my main character sees someone at the window who shouldn't be there. So I think it's kind of take things from your everyday life and put an unusual spin on them is the kind of thing I tend to do.
Oh, that's brilliant. I mean, that's certainly something people can use in schools, especially with the Year 11 exams coming up. Certainly looking around you and looking at the things that are around you and trying to make them into a kind of a story, thinking about how things can twist. I certainly know with your book, especially one of the things I really liked was the radar that is actually a kind of a gun on top of the building, which I thought was absolutely phenomenal.
But spoiler alert, because they think it's like a satellite dish.
And it's kind of like when you said about the kind of army barracks, that kind of makes me think, you know, was that, did that have something to do with it? Kind of like you see this mysterious building, but you know it's an army barracks. Are there some kind of secret weapons that are there to stop people from coming in?
I think maybe subconsciously, you know, now you say that, could well have come from there.
Oh, brilliant. So it's certainly something that teachers can use to get them, you know, just go outside and have a look outside their windows, take them out, get them to write down the names of objects and just twist them into stories, into something different. Brilliant. So in that case then, let's move on to the next stage then. So characters. How do you create your characters?
So for me, the characters just kind of pop into my mind. And when I write the first draft, they can possibly be quite two-dimensional. So when I go back and do further drafts, one of the important things is to flesh them out and make them three-dimensional, just like real-life people.
Okay.
And the things to consider when really fleshing out your characters is to make sure they have flaws and weaknesses as well as strengths. To make sure they have likes and dislikes and hobbies and things that they enjoy doing. And then also possibly to think about things that have happened in their past that can that inform how they behave today. So basically everything about them, their hobbies, their likes, their dislikes, things in their past, that all shapes their behaviour nowadays. So I think those are things to always really consider to make sure that you make a fully rounded character.
Okay, so making sure that your characters that you start off with and start planning become real people, essentially. Do you take inspiration from the people that are around you? Do you, so for instance, with your characters, do you look at some of the people that you know? Are any of those traits in any of your characters?
I mean, my husband will hate me saying this, but in some ways, my main character, Toby, does have some things like him, some characteristics like him, because Toby's a young carer for his mum who has ME, and obviously my husband has to do caring duties for me. So just in terms of how my main character bottles up his feelings and is also really great at football and things like that, definitely not on purpose, but I think I definitely shaped some of that on my husband. But I think, I'm not sure I can say that any of my, I know some people say, don't be mean to me because you'll end up in my book. I can't pin down any of my characters being based on particular people I know. No.
Okay. Well, it's excellent though, just knowing that, you know, if the, when they're going to write and they're picking those characters, you know, flesh out the details, give them flaws, that sort of stuff. I love that. I think that's absolutely brilliant. I think that's one of the great things that we can do, especially we can teach that over, especially over the course of the next 7 or 8 weeks before students' exams, you know, getting kids to kind of flesh out their characters and give them those flaws and think about, you know, who they might take after. Are there any characteristics that they have themselves or that some people that they know like? Yeah, I think that's absolutely brilliant.
And then to add to that, I know some writers kind of take a particular scenario. For example, your characters go to McDonald's, and how would each of your different characters act in that scenario? So what would they order? You know, where would they sit? Or just, so it doesn't have to be going to McDonald's, but putting all your characters in one particular scenario. It helps you to learn a lot about your characters, even if it's not a scene that's part of your book, just to, learn things about your characters.
Because it can also then lead to what differences they have.
Exactly.
You know, if one orders the Big Mac and the other one orders the chicken burger, you know, why is that? If one orders the vegetarian burger, you know, you suddenly got a character that has a whole different set of kind of morals. Yeah. I absolutely love that. I think that's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, I stole that. That's not my idea.
Okay, that's right. That's fine. We all steal. I think we all steal each other's ideas, don't we? I mean, if you look at songs.
I feel
songs,
like I need to name, like, is my writing friend Stuart White, who always talks about that. So I feel like I should name him.
Oh, absolutely. You know, but that's absolutely brilliant. I think it's excellent. So that was the first half of the interview that I did with Sally. And there were lots of things to talk about in that first half. There were some absolutely brilliant pieces of advice, I thought, when we talked about some of the things that she was doing. Giving yourself space and time to come up with plots. So I think one of the things that possibly as a teacher, what we could do is... maybe a set of homework where they don't have to write anything down. What they just have to do is think of loads of different stories, things that they might actually have, things that they might actually do, kind of look at the things that are around her, think of the stories that might be around you. Because the other thing that she talked about in there, which I also thought was good, which kind of links to that space and time thing, is look at the buildings that are around you, look at the trees, look at the people, look at the your bedroom, and then I think what she says is put a spin on it. And I absolutely love that kind of putting a spin on it. And again, that can really kind of push that creativity to the next level. You could have a series of pictures that you give as a homework, which could perhaps be, you know, there's a picture, tell me what it is, but with a spin on it. So if you have if someone says they've got a glass of water, then it might be a fluid that kind of makes you suddenly kind of drowsy, and then what happens to you, you know, when you drink water? Why has that happened? Do you then kind of go to the hospital because of it? Or perhaps you have a book that's lying around that when you open it to a certain page, one of the, you kind of fall into that setting. Or maybe that it's a lamp that when it turns on, it shines and creates a hole in the ground, which you can then climb down into a different world. Just kind of really flesh out, put different spins on different things. I think the one that Sally said was about the kind of army barracks and that sense of mystery. There are certainly buildings all around you that you can kind of get your students to kind of think about as they're going along, and think about who might live there and what they might be hiding and what secrets are in there. you know, if there's they see something that's just lying on the ground, could it be kind of a secret weapon that they've got? Where they just kind of you that homework or the thing, you could even take your kids out of the class. Take them for a wander around the school if you trust them enough to do that. But, you know, look at things in a different way. We've gone past autumn now, but looking at the leaves that are on the floor that are reds and golds and all kind of different autumnal colours, and kind of get them to think about how they manage to change into all of those different colours. Maybe you might have them and talk about how an invisible goblin goes around with a felt tip pen colouring him in different colours. Or maybe there is some kind of giant that kind of, but it's quite an evil giant that when they, every autumn or spring, it walks along and takes the life out of all the leaves in order to keep themselves alive. But anything that can create and do that kind of spark of imagination, which I think was brilliant I from that one. So I was writing down ideas all the time whilst we were talking, and I think it's a great thing to actually do. And then she talked about her characters, and I think the characters, one of the great things I took from that is the kind of scenario thing that she talked about. How do different characters react in different situations? And I think one of the things that you could come up with for that in terms of your English classes is to really think about your friends to start off with. So when your friends are sitting in McDonald's, what do they order and why do they order it? Because if you can start to figure out why your friends ordered those kind of things from McDonald's, and that can that doesn't have, just have to be burgers, it can be drinks, it can be sides, what makes them different? Because as I said when I was interviewing Sally, the person that eats the vegetarian option, you know, is that because your character is morally against kind of killing animals? Is it because they just don't like the taste of meat? Or is it for some other reason? Is it because they're allergic to meat? There's so many different questions that you can kind of take from that piece of advice. And the other things that she said about looking into their background, what shapes their behavior? What is it that they do? So if you decide that your character is, let's say, a girl and she's quite an angry character, then you have to look at the background and just ask yourself that question. And what a great way of planning, what a great way to spend kind of 10 minutes of your lesson. Why is she angry? What has happened to her? Obviously, I think we have to put certain rules and regulations in there, because I think sometimes even year 11s can be a bit immature and stupid sometimes. So I think we have to kind of lay down some ground rules about one of the things that aren't accepted, and kind of point it in the direction of the exam itself, in the fact that, you know, there are certain things that will be unacceptable in an exam situation. So you can't kind of do certain things or say certain things. So you have to lay those ground rules, I think. But getting them to think about why that character is angry, why that character is shy, why that character is outspoken or opinionated, and just looking at that background, that the things, what things have happened in the past that creates their behavior. I mean, with Sally's book, Toby and the Silver Blood Witches, it's about the thing that shapes Toby is kind of that link to the chronic illness that his mum has. And it's one of those books where you have a kind of child as a carer. And that's something that there are quite a number of children that can actually link to and know about. And that might be something that comes out in those kind of stories. But also the things that she also said about thinking about what hobbies they do, what kind of flesh out those characters, what do they like, what do they dislike. I think sometimes it's really hard, especially, I mean, I don't know about the rest of the teachers out there, but it's really hard to get any information out of students at the minute. It's kind of like you can sit in a class and say, well, what's your favourite meal? And you'll be met with silence. And sometimes I think helping to go through these characters and start to think about some of the things that they like, and letting kind of children know that it's okay for them to like reading, it's okay for them to like sitting and playing the PS5, because anything that you say that they like creates a little part of that character, you know. And then you can give them a situation. If your character's playing the Xbox or PlayStation and your mum comes in and tells them to turn it off and you're halfway through the game, how do they react? And there's a lot of ways, I think, that you can play about with this fleshing out of these characters. And I think also kind of sending them home with these characters and giving them that space and time to really kind of think about what they're doing. You know, start off with the basics in schools, give them some questions, some prompts, some of the things that will actually help them to think for themselves. Although I think students are finding that much harder than I've found that in the past. Students don't seem to be thinking for themselves. Anything like that is going to really kind of push out those their imagination and push that sense of seeing things that aren't there. Because secondary school students generally tend to have a lack of imagination when it comes to writing, simply because I think that lots of students don't read an awful lot. I mean, I don't know whether that's just my school or whether that's nationwide, I don't know, but there are far too few children that read nowadays, and I think that's a damn shame because they could get a lot from it. But we will come back very soon with a second part of the interview after this.
This show is brought to you in partnership with John Catt Educational, publishing professional development books and resources to support great teaching and learning in schools around the world. Have you checked out their latest releases? Use the code JCTTR2324 for 20% off your order. Don't miss out. Visit johncattbookshop.com to explore their full range of titles and advance your own professional development today. Happy reading.
Introducing Eton X from Eton College, a diverse range of quality online courses enabling young people to aspire and excel. Designed for self-study, these web-based courses empower your students with essential leadership, communication, and academic skills for success at school and beyond. Our Study Skills course sharpens their learning abilities, while the AI Fundamentals course equips them with vital digital know-how in a fast-changing world. Other popular courses include verbal communication, critical thinking, writing skills, resilience, creative problem solving, and many more. Offer the Eton X curriculum in your school for free. Visit etonx.com to find out more.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and this is Teachers Talk Radio News.
The Guardian features an analysis of the impact COVID and austerity had on children in England. The article focuses on four key areas and contains some deeply concerning data. In terms of child poverty, 4.2 million children are in relative poverty, and young people experiencing destitution has tripled over the past 3 years. According to researchers, this means children facing such hardships may go without proper clothes or share a bed with a sibling. But it also means missing out on family outings and school trips. These children are also more likely to be affected by cuts to local amenities, including libraries, parks and youth clubs, further reducing life opportunities. Schools in early years have struggled since the pandemic. Issues with children not meeting developmental milestones in EYFS and poor attendance and deteriorating behaviours are affecting primary and secondary age pupils. This, alongside crumbling school buildings, recruitment and retention difficulties, and soaring demand for SEND services, continues to impact pupils, particularly the disadvantaged. Health is also having a huge impact on outcomes. Declining services means problems are storing up for the future, particularly in the field of mental health. Record numbers of young people are being referred, 1.4 million in 2022 in England alone. In primary, 2 in 5 children in England leave primary school overweight, putting them at risk of diabetes, heart disease, and other issues for later in life. Child protection concerns are also on the increase. In 2023, 83,840 children were looked after, a steady increase year on year from 64,460 in 2010. Teenagers are now the fastest growing group of looked after children, with limited services in place to support. In response to the bleak statistics, many have called for a national plan for childhood to transform the life chances of many described as the left behind. This term was used by the Association of Directors of Children's Services, and the organisation said it was the narrow view of government to focus on a recovery plan just for education, when they should have looked at a recovery plan for childhood, as this would have addressed wider wellbeing issues. The organisation also called for a Department for Children to coordinate policy across government areas, not just education. A government spokesperson responded to the issues raised by highlighting recent changes to childcare and an increase in educational standards. In Scotland, teachers have been speaking to BBC News about what they describe as rising pupil violence. In Aberdeen, staff say some fear for their safety and are scared to go to work. The council is being called upon by unions to intervene, but it says it's already trying to support staff and address the underlying causes of poor behaviour. The EIS union surveyed 800 members in Aberdeen, and almost half reported violent pupil behaviour in school every day, and more than a third said they had been physically assaulted. The problem is reported in both secondary and primary schools. The council said any misbehaviour was unacceptable, and that it was considering all feedback from staff, saying, "Everyone who visits and uses a school is entitled to a safe, peaceful, respectful environment." In another story from the BBC, this time from Bristol, the focus is on school children being failed as permanent exclusion rates rose. More than twice as many children in the city were permanently excluded last year compared to the past 2 years. There are now plans to offer early intervention in primary schools so serious issues can be resolved sooner. But some point to wider concerns which also need to be addressed if things are to change. Many media outlets have also reported on the new guidance on the use of mobile phones issued to schools in England. The guidance received mixed reviews, with some welcoming the clarity, whilst others described it as a non-policy for a non-issue. Many schools already have policies in place to deal with this. Education Secretary Gillian Keegan told BBC Breakfast the guidance aimed to offer consistency and that there is no place for mobile phones in our schools all the way through the school day. The government announcement comes shortly after Esther Jai, mother of murdered Brianna Jai, called for changes to the law to stop children accessing social media. There are currently no complete bans on mobile phones in schools in Wales, Scotland and Northern Ireland, where education decisions are devolved from the UK. Finally, the writer of BBC Three's comedy drama Borders gave an interview on education and opportunity in code switching. The show, about 5 black teens with scholarships to an elite boarding school, focuses on issues such as our access to opportunity and the reality of feeling out of place at times. Daniel Lawrence Taylor used some of his own experiences at university to write, as well as speaking to friends who attended private schools. He says code switching, changing accent, tone of voice and mannerisms depending on where or who a person may be with, was an important thing to highlight, as many black people feel they have to code switch when entering majority white spaces. Taylor also says he wanted to show that whilst there may be benefits to attending academic institutions like the one in the show, there are challenges too, including making sure the environment is safe enough for those from different backgrounds to really take advantage and use the opportunity to its fullest. This has been your Teachers Talk Radio News with Jo Fox.
And you're back with Sean McKay in the Late Late Show this Friday evening. A couple of things about the news. There's lots of, they've kind of bad news coming on at the minute. Destitution tripled, child protection concerns increasing, rising pupil violence in Scotland. There does seem to have been some kind of major shift since the COVID pandemic, and in no way could. I think there's a lot of kind of mental health issues that have come because of that. And it's a concern. It's horrifying that that kind of the destitution has tripled is an absolutely horrifying thing. And it's really upsetting knowing that kind of those child protection concerns, destitution, people aren't eating properly, children aren't eating properly. It's hideous. So let's get back to the creative writing process. So we've talked to Sally so far about characters and about how to start thinking about writing, about how to start thinking about characters, how to twist everyday objects into kind of these really great plot points. But what else has she got to say? And she has a lot to say and lots of cracking advice, as I said. So let's get into the second half. So moving on then. So we've got our plots from the things that are outside. We've got our characters that starts off with two dimensions, and then we flesh out all of the flaws and all of the things that's great about them and the different things that they might do in different scenarios. So for you personally, what is the best thing about writing?
For me, it's definitely the escapism.
Yeah.
So in those 40 minutes when I'm writing, I'm not thinking about the symptoms that are in my body. I'm not thinking about, you know, anything in life. I am living the story. I am with my characters in whatever their story world is. So that's what I absolutely love about it. It's kind of because I can't go anywhere, you know, I'm stuck at home, but my characters can travel to new worlds basically, and I can go with them. So that's what I love about it.
That's absolutely brilliant. So is there a particular character that you like being in your book more than kind of any other character? So when you're thinking of your characters and you're fleshing them all out and you've got them all down and you start writing, is there a particular character is it just the main character that you're in that escapist world in, or are there other characters that you love as well?
So when we write nowadays, we're really encouraged to write from close third person.
Yeah.
Which means that always through the main character's eyes. And I was thinking about this with Goodnight, Mr. Tom, because that's actually as many classics and an omniscient narrator. So you kind of learn about, you see it through all the characters' eyes. So even in the first chapter of Goodnight, Mr. Tom, this morning, I saw that you learn what Mr. Tom is feeling, you also learn what Will is feeling.
Yes.
So we're now told really to do it by, you know, just through the main character. So when I'm writing the story, it is all through Toby. That said, when, particularly in the dialogue, when I'm bringing in other characters, I'm feeling them as well. And I think my favourite characters to write are ones that bring a bit of humour.
Okay.
And particularly more and more, I'm finding my stories are becoming more and more, hopefully other people will think they're funny. But I think even through my trilogy, I've noticed I'm going more and more towards like bringing in, so I have one witch, who's called Witch Bumble, who brings the humorous element. I think those are probably the characters I relate to most now because they're a bit of a light relief.
Yes, absolutely. Those kind of release characters, the ones that kind of release all the tension a little bit, I think are absolutely crucial to kind of plots and moving that forward. And certainly having someone like with Toby and the character in your book, it's kind of like, and also there's one thing that kind of it doesn't have in Goodnight, Mr. Tom is kind of friends. He doesn't, the character in Mr. Tom doesn't seem to have anyone, and that's the same with both of them, and that's what makes it so special when the two of them become friends. And I really like the same thing that happened in your novel, where the kind of the friends are kind of there but apart, but eventually they kind of come together and he realizes that he needs them.
I think friendship is definitely really important, particularly in children's books. I think that's definitely a core theme. And I think in Goodnight, Mr. Tom, Will also, I've forgotten his name, but he does gain a friend. But then I think he's, isn't he not killed or something terrible when he goes off with like his actor mum and dad? I don't know. But yeah, friendship is definitely a really core theme.
Brilliant. Okay, so coming back round to kind of school, and we've got the plots and we've got the characters and we've got the lovely things about that escapism, getting into your writing and not actually being in the room but being with them. For the year 11s out there, what advice would you give to a student who is coming up to their exams? They know they've got this kind of extended piece of writing to do. What advice would you give them about writing?
So I thought long and hard about this question.
Okay.
There are so many answers I could give, but I think one of the most important things is to make your story or their story. Sorry, did you just hear that? My dog just whined. Sorry.
That's
like,
right.
Whined in the background.
I'm sitting next to my dog as well. She's doing the same thing.
To make their story original and unique. So don't try to write the next Harry Potter or the next Lord of the Rings or the next Hunger Games, but to write something that is unique. And if they can bring in their own personal experience, even better. And so, for example, if they do decide to write about witches, how can they make their witches or whatever their stereotypical character is, how can they make it different to ones that are already out there? So in things that the character wears, in, for example, the magic system, how can that be different? So that was one. That wasn't part one of my answer. Make the story original, unique, and make it theirs.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm just gonna shut my dog out quickly because he's really whining. Let's go.
That's all right.
Boy, going to join my husband. Right, he's gone. Okay. So part two of my answer was, which kind of leads into the whole personal, making the story personal. And part two was, every story has an external arc, which is the main adventure and the exciting plot. But I think the best stories also have an internal arc, which is basically how the character changes through their story.
Yeah.
So, for example, in my character, in my story, the main character comes to terms with his mum's illness through the story. Or you could have a character that's scared at the start, and through the story they become brave, or they gain friends through the story. And so this internal arc, this character development, always happens through the external arc, through the main plot. But it's what really gives a story the heart, and I think it's what really makes readers relate to the story. And again, if the students can use their own personal experience to inform whatever changes their character goes through, even better. So yeah, that's what I personally think is makes the best stories, making it personal and having some sort of internal character arc.
Okay, that's absolutely brilliant. So with the internal character arc, would you have also kind of an internal dialogue? I mean, where they kind of think about the things that are happening and they talk about the things that are their feelings and that sort of stuff. Would that make a good kind of internal arc as well that links to that main story?
Definitely. So I think just as you need dialogue and action and descriptive passages, you also having some sort of internal monologue is also another great thing to add.
Okay, brilliant. So moving on then to the next question. It's a very short question. And I've spoken to authors on our Teacher Talk Radio, and we've had teachers, authors incoming in to school. And different authors do different things. So I want your kind of view on this one. Plan or just write?
So it may be a short question, but I have a long answer.
Okay.
So writers often talk about either being pantsers, which is like basically flying by the seat of their pants, or being planners. But I'm kind of in the middle, which we call a plantser.
Planter, okay.
So I can't just write. I think maybe it's because I don't have the time to just gaily write, and then because you can easily write yourself into a corner and then have to go back. So I have to know where I'm going. So before I start writing my story, I have to know the beginning, the end, and kind of three plot points of how the story gets there. And I know some writers, you know, do amazing spreadsheets with so many different, all the main story mapped out. And I think that's incredible. And it's also incredible when you can just pants it. But I also can't plan it all out, because if I do, I lose the motivation to write. Because if I know it's all written down in kind of note form, I'm not going to forget it. So one of my motivations to keep writing is that if I don't write it, I'm going to forget it.
Right.
So I have to do a hybrid approach. I mean, for students, I would advise that you do have some sort of a plan, at least some sort of backbone of a structure with a beginning, middle and end. So know where you're going, particularly as I don't know how much time you have to write draft after draft. And the other thing is, I've also found the reason I can't plan it all out meticulously is as I write, I learn things about my characters and the plot that I had no idea would happen until I started writing. I do a bit of both.
Okay, I think that's a great answer. I think certainly for students that are coming up, do a bit of a plan, but also allow freedom for the characters to become a little bit more creative as you go along.
Absolutely.
But still kind of stick to that story arc, but move them in different ways. If it has to move or bend a little bit, kind of, go with the flow, let them do it.
Yes, because it can surprise you, it really can. But
Oh, absolutely. So my last question for you then, and this is one that I think lots of students can relate to, especially when they're sitting an exam under these really pressurized conditions. And one of the worst things I think for students to face of any pressure of anything is a blank sheet of paper. So have you ever had writer's block, and how have you overcome it?
So I don't typically get it because I have so much time to think. And I do have advice for if you have it, but I'm not sure my advice works for in an exam situation, because normally I would say either take some space and time away and do something else creative or discuss it with your friends and brainstorm. So you can't really do either of those in an exam setting. So I guess, maybe try and do a mind. But whereabouts would the writer's block happen? Would it be coming up with a story at the start?
I would think what normally would happen with lots of our students say is they have no idea what to write. So I suppose they could take time out and they could get creative, because maybe from what you've said there, maybe draw a picture of their main character. Or maybe kind of sit and do a plan, or just write rubbish for a couple of minutes. What do you think about
that? So I was thinking maybe do some sort of a mind map, trying to come up with. So I think the main starting point of a story for me is always what's called the inciting incident. Which is basically the moment of change when everything in your character's world changes and plunges them into the story. So when you start a story, you've got a character in their normal world, and then you have this moment of change. So can they brainstorm what this big moment is going to be that makes the whole story happen? And again, that could be, objects around them in their everyday life with a twist on them, basically. That can then plunge their character into the story. I think that's what I'd try and think about, search for that moment of change that will that the whole story will come from.
No, I think that's absolutely brilliant. Writing down that one question: what is the exciting moment? What is the big thing that happens to them? And then kind of mind mapping from there, because that one simple question can kind of come up with lots of creative ideas and they can kind of work from that. I think that's a brilliant thing. That's something I might have just written down on my pad that's next to me that I'm going to use with my classes on Monday.
Good. I'm happy to be helpful.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Also I think maybe think about what their character's main goal is, because normally the big moment of change is often linked to whatever their main goal is for the whole story.
Yeah.
Think about what that will be too.
Oh, that's absolutely brilliant. Well, so to summarize the things that we've talked about, so in order to actually start writing, look at the things that are around you, think about the things, the everyday objects, and kind of twist them a little bit.
Yeah.
For your plot, your characters are always going to start off two-dimensionally, so then flesh them out, give them flaws, give them friends, give them emotions, what sort of things might they buy at McDonald's kind of thing. The best thing about writing is making your is being in the moment and escaping. So remember that you're going to be in a world when you're in this thing, and try and stay there. Escapism, make a story of your story unique. Have that kind of an external arc, but also the internal arc that makes it really, really interesting. And if you get writer's block, come up with a really exciting thing that's going to happen, and then kind of plan that out from there. Would that about summarize what we've done?
Yeah, that's a very... Glad you were listening. Perfect summary.
Okay, fantastic. Well, Sally, thank you ever so much for coming on the show and talking to us about that. I'm sure that the listeners will absolutely be thrilled to take some of the advice from a fantastic author with an absolutely great story.
Thank you so much for having me. I've really enjoyed chatting to you.
That's right. It's been brilliant. Right. Well, thank you ever so much. And I will hopefully talk to you at some point soon.
Thanks a lot.
Cheers.
Bye. Bye-bye.
And so... what an absolutely amazing interview that was. I thoroughly enjoyed every single moment of it. It was so full of advice, and I've got so many kind of things running through my head about the things that we talked about in there. There were so many different things that kind of making your story, you know, don't try to do Harry Potter. Try to come up with something unique and individual, something that's personal to you. I think that's one of the things I think as a teacher I've tried to tell my students. You know, the more you do it about you and your experiences, the more you're going to make your character react in a much more genuine way, a way that you reacted to that kind of situation. And that's why your story is a unique story. So I always try to encourage them to kind of, in that uniqueness, to bring themselves into it, especially themselves as a character, but making it unique, having it as their story, I think is such an amazing piece of advice. Really simple, but really, really amazing. And then that second thing that Sally talked about in terms of having that kind of internal arc, how does that character kind of change throughout the story, even in the tiny bit that they're going to get through in that 45 minutes within that that exam that they've got to do, if they're doing AQA, then, which is the exam board that I'm doing, how does that character change? Because even with a short story that you're going to do in 45 minutes, you're still going to have a believable character, flesh out those things, get those plans done. But, you know, make it personal. That, you know, think about that internal monologue. What are they saying to themselves? How are you going to get your readers, in terms of the readers, the examiners, how are you going to get the examiners to like your character? Give them that internal arc that kind of Sally talked about. And I think if you can plan that and you can do that, you're going to get some really interesting kind of stories coming out in their exams. And they can certainly practice that. There's plenty of time left for your students to kind of start practicing those external and internal arcs that you've got, and make it kind of personal. But then obviously there was, we talked about kind of planning and what they can do to plan. And one of the things, obviously, that Sally said there was that she was in the middle of the kind of the pantsers and the planners. So have a plan. And what she talked about was kind of have a beginning and end point. Know what your beginning and end is going to be. And then once you've got your beginning and end, kind of have those three or four plot points that are going to be your main focus of that story or part of the story. If obviously if your students are kind of doing that, I think that's a great piece of advice, because that way you're giving your students a beginning and end goal. You're saying to them, you know, start off with what happens at the beginning, write down what happens at the end in terms of note taking for your plan, and then just give it three or four things that are going to happen. And that way you've done your plan. Your plan's really quick. You can quickly sketch out your characters, give them that internal arc, think about taking them into something which is more fleshed out. You know, what shapes their behavior, how might they react in given situations. All of those things are going to help in that planning stage when it comes to that extremely short piece of writing. But just get that plan in. I think that was an absolutely brilliant one. You know, have the backbone of a plan and then go through that. But, you know, allow yours to have that kind of sense of it doesn't have to be a really long plan. And then the next thing then was about kind of, you know, if you've got writer's block, how do you kind of change that? How do you get them out of that block into start to write to something? And apart from, obviously, as we said, to start planning, to have that beginning and end and start to come back from that. What Sally also kind of said was be creative, have that insightful moment. A moment of change, something that happens that's brilliant, that then you can flesh out the story from there. What's the character's main goal? I mean, just writing those two questions and answering them with a kind of a mind map might help you in terms of that writer's block, something that you can give to kind of your students as they go along. So draw a picture of your main character, write some of the things that they might do if they were playing the PlayStation and suddenly they decided their mum came in and said, get off the PlayStation. How would they react? But have that insightful moment, that moment of change, and kind of work around that. And I think if we can give our students that kind of advice, which Sally has given tonight on the show, I think that they can do some really good things. Yeah, there's some fantastic advice, which I'm going to kind of take with me into school on Monday when I talk to my students, and hopefully get them to really think about not only their characters, think about changing everyday objects into something with a twist, taking buildings that are around us and creating stories from them, having characters that are fleshed out massively through the things that they're going to happen to them. But also, if they have that writer's block, you know, draw a mind map, write something, anything, write some rubbish down, you know, put some words down on a paper, get creative. And I think if we do that, we will be able to give our students a really, really great kind of starting point to go. So there's lots, I think, that we can kind of take from what Sally's talked about over the last kind of hour, and which I've kind of fleshed out a little bit. And don't forget to point out the students that, you know, if you really get into your story, I mean, they've got to check it and keep going back to it, making sure their spelling, punctuation and grammar's okay. Mm-hmm. But also just make sure that they are in that story. They are living that story through their main character, and give that main character a bit of leeway. Make them, you know, where is that going to take them? And so a bit of practice on that, I think, will actually get them to a really good place. And I think practicing that over the next 7 or 8 weeks will be brilliant. So thank you again to Sally Doherty author of Topian, the Silver Blood Witch, for coming onto my show and talking about writing and the writing process and giving us so many amazing things to take away to our school and hopefully help our students to become better writers. And thank you as well for joining me tonight, if you were here. I know there were quite a few people came in and asked questions. Also remember, in a couple of weeks' time, we will be talking to a different author. Well, not an author, sorry. We're talking to someone who's an expert in kind of in writing, which is Catherine Prange, I think her name is, if I'm saying that right. Followed 2 weeks after that by talking to author Emily Randall-Jones about neurodiversity and writing too. I hope you've enjoyed tonight. I've certainly thoroughly enjoyed talking to Sally, and I hope you all have a great weekend, and I will see you in 2 weeks' time.
You've been listening to Teachers Talk Radio. Tune in live and listen back at ttradio.org. We look forward to hearing from you next time on Teachers Talk Radio.